now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, after the legendary Saw Gerrera and his Rebel Squad partisans go missing on Geonosis, the Ghost crew is sent to investigate. There will be butts, bugs, and babes! A little shout out to our co-podcasters, the Two True Freaks, the Jack and Eddie boys, and we're looking at General Syndulla for the babe. Because we're talking about Ghost Geonosis Part 1 this week. How you doing, Chris?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
Been 48 hours since we last spoke.
I've been doing a lot of walking in those 48 hours.
Yeah, I actually just finished reading a novel manuscript of a novel I wrote 10 years ago.
Ooh, how was that? Was that like half cringe and half like, ooh, this is pretty good? That's usually what happens when I look back at stuff I did.
It's really interesting because, like, one of my goals this year is to publish something. And I might have mentioned it before that I recently wrote a superhero novel, but that needs, like, really massive, a lot of reworking and stuff like that. But I remembered that when I was in college, like, pre-2010, actually, I graduated 2010, I had written an almost completed novel for a novel writing class. And so when I read it, it's like 90% done of the first script. The first draft is 90% done. I just pretty much have to finish writing the ending and like fix a few scenes here and there. And then I can go back through and edit it. But it was really interesting because it was like looking at a time capsule. Because on one hand, I can tell it's my writing. On the other hand, my I definitely have like changed in 10 years. My writing has.
I should hope
and
so.
Yeah, and I can see how it advanced. And just, like, little things like, okay, here's the thing for writers. People don't normally say each other's names in conversation. Like, I don't constantly go, Chris, what are your points, Chris? All right, Chris, blah, blah, blah. Like, we just don't normally say people's names when we talk to them.
Yeah, rarely we do, I think.
Yeah, and I, like, almost, like, every piece of dialogue is someone saying someone's name. And I was just like, oh, God.
I mean, you could make it into, like, a characteristic of a specific character, you know, or something. But, yeah, like, usually it's only when you're introducing somebody or trying to get their attention or something like that. In moments of, like, extra emphasis, you know.
Yeah, but. I mean, like, now that I think about it, because I usually say you're name at the beginning where I go, how you doing, Chris? But then I just realized, like, you know, 208 episodes in this, I usually don't introduce myself.
and we have that's true, but even but basically you saying how are you doing, Chris, is also, it's an introduction because someone out there is maybe listening for the first time. And
hey guys, I'm Hope.
And then I should, from now on, I should say I'm doing fine, Hope. And then then both of our responsibilities have been fulfilled, except for
someone
all
has been listening
207 episodes before this when I haven't said nothing.
I just realized, like, somebody, like, has been listening to the show for 207 episodes, and they're like, oh, that's her name.
No, they figured it out because this is Star Wars, and there's been a million times when we've been like, your name's right in the title of this one.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that my favorite part of what it's been is how dated the book is. Here's another writing tip. Be careful with your references. Like, if this book was supposed to be set, like, early 2000s, then it's fine. But I wanted it to have kind of like a timeless thing of it, like, and not have a specific date other than age of social media, because my characters definitely watch Glee. And I made a reference, one of them made a reference to a character in Glee, and when I can't remember who that character even is 10 years later, it's a bad reference. At one point, they're flirting by Facebook poking each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Oh, my character said that he read a brand new book called The Hunger Games. But my favorite of all, is there a scene where the two brothers in the book are watching breaking news of Osama bin Laden being killed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I remember writing that scene in my room. Like, I remember writing that scene. So when I read that, I was just like, oh, yeah, I did write that the night Osama bin Laden was killed. So I was like, oh, God. So yeah. It's been interesting.
It's better just to make up some, you know, some generic, you know, terrorist in another country and stuff to let it, and that way you can just fill in whatever.
I'm gonna rework the entire scene. that's gonna get taken out, and it's just been interesting, like, having just so much distance on it. Like, it's a romance, like, it's a queer romance, and I'm like, one of the two people in the romance is an asshole. Like, he's an asshole, why are you dating him? And then, like, it's so tropey, like, they're constantly, like, they get in a fight, and the boy, like, climbs up the tree to, like, apologize, and then he falls out of the tree on top of his lover, and I was like, man, this is so tropey. We gotta fix this. So it's been interesting. I've gone through about 222 pages, and went through it in about 3 days, so it was a fun weekend, so. Ghost of Geonosis.
I'm ready for it.
So, just so you guys know, we're just covering part one today. The reason why we're separating part one and part two, even though that the episodes aired the same night and they aired together, they're separated on Disney Plus, which is what made our decision to do these as separate episodes.
I just want to say this, just for the sake of clarity. I'm the one who argued, like, let's just do one part. That's how they do it on Disney Plus. And then at the end of the episode, I was like, maybe that wasn't the best decision in the world. Maybe Hope was right.
It was kind of funny because, like,
You guys know, Hope was trying to do the right thing.
Because the Rebels Recon, the episode recap on StarWars.com, and the episode summary on Wikipedia are all for both episodes together. And I was like, this is difficult to write show notes. But we did do that for a reason, because a lot of people have Disney Plus now, and that's how a lot of people are watching Rebels for the first time.
Well, this is what Bum 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 is made for. Except, yeah, sort of, it doesn't even end with a sort of bum bum bum. It just is sort of like,
just fucking ends.
Scene missing. Insert next scene here.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But that's why we're doing these as part ones. And also, you get, like, extra J-Guys and Jedi goodness.
That's right. Instead of, like, one longer show, you'll get two regular-sized shows, so it'll get more coverage, for sure.
And honestly, we're flying through Rebels so fast, it's kind of, like, nice to have a breather.
There's no reason not to, yeah. So, I saw a rumor video, but it was a rumor video of how they tracked down to see whether a rumor was true or false, and you know what they were talking about, Hope?
Rebels sequel.
Yeah.
I do really hope there is a Rebels sequel.
It looks like there probably is going to be, but the but on it, there's a but with it. So, like, all the people
go, everybody.
Yeah, the but is it does it sound like they're wanting to call it a Rebel sequel, but it sounds like it's gonna have Ahsoka and
Sabine
in it. Yes, but that what you know, so that so that means maybe it's not gonna have, like, you know, I mean, maybe if it was gonna be a Rebel sequel, it would have Ezra in it, or more of the crew or whatever, but it sounds like it sounds like what we were talking about, like maybe just like sort of more like a spin-off, you know?
Yeah.
But either way, they were saying it's due in November of this year.
My only thing is, like, I'm all down for a Rebel sequel, spinoff, whatever you want to call it. I'm all down for it. The only thing that makes me criticize it is that is probably the reason that Resistance got so shafted. And I think them trying to push this Rebels sequel, spinoff, whatever, it totally possibly wrecked the development of Star Wars Resistance, which is a shame.
It's hard to say how they did it. It could have been something that was maybe not necessarily, maybe Plan B is the wrong phrase for it, but they might have had, like, when they were doing Resistance, they might have had several options they could have run with, you know, in production, and were like, and, you know, and pitched and stuff, and when they decide, what, for whatever reason they decided, or that might have cut Resistance short, they were like, well, we've got these other things to choose from, and this one's got Ahsoka, who's like, just her character is becoming, you know, actually ever since Clone Wars ended, after Clone Wars ended, it seems like her graph of popularity is just rising and rising. So she's a no-brainer. She's like a no-brainer. And Sabine's got like Mandalorian connections, and the Mandalorian's going on, so they might have been like, yeah, that might have been one of the one, or they might have grabbed something that they'd been working on and then retooled it into that. So who knows? We'll find out, I guess, hopefully, or we'll find out more anyway as time goes on. But I wouldn't get too upset about it. Like, this one might have been put on the back burner because of Resistance, for all we know, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like Resistance got caught in the transition to Disney Plus.
Yeah, I think Resistance got like caught in the story. Yeah, in the transition to Disney Plus. Because we don't know what the story of the third movie is going to be.
And somebody pointed out that when Disney Plus launched, it wasn't putting up any already running shows. So that's why, like, season one of Resistance was on there, but season two of Resistance is premiering, I think, this week as the time that we're recording. Because they weren't going to do weekly episodes of shows that are still running
concurrently
on
going,
Disney
yeah.
Channel. Now they can put it up because it's over.
It's probably, it might have something to do with, like, copyright reasons and internal contractual agreements and stuff like that.
But I think that you also came up with a very valid point. They were developing season two of Resistance alongside Solo, and that filmed several years ago before episode 9 was ever even filming, before they even like finished scripts for episode 9. So I do feel like it got wrecked by a lot of different factors, which is a shame, because that show really needed 3 seasons, and it has the potential for 3 seasons.
It would be really interesting to see a documentary on Resistance of how like it was when they were developing it Solo era, and you know, and then when it went on further, how it changed and what happened. It sounds like this one will have a short run, but it'll have a potentially good story about it, you know?
Yeah.
But who knows, with Disney, it might take 20 years before they'll let anybody write a...
write a book about it. My main question about the show is, was it always supposed to be 2 seasons, or was it supposed to be longer and get cut short and got cut short?
Somebody tell us. If there's anybody there listening right now, just tell us. We won't tell anybody.
Because that, to me, determines my criticism. Because if it was supposed to be longer and it got cut short, then I can forgive a lot of season 2 in particular. Because season 1 felt very thought out. It felt deliberate. It had a pace to it. And it was all leading up to Hosnian Prime. It felt pretty deliberate.
But if not, Hope wants to have a talk with the writer's room.
All right, you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right. Ghost of Geonosis Part 1 is the 49th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 7th, 2017 as a two-parter, Both episodes aired that night together. It was written by Dave Filoni, Matt Michnovitz, and Stephen Melching, and it was directed by Mel Zweier. Some extra information for you. That's not extra information. That's just me. This was the season 3 mid-season opener, and it was the first episode released after Rogue One. Forrest Whitaker reprised his role as Saul Guerrera from Rogue One. Even though they haven't named him yet in this episode, he gets named in part 2. Matthew Wood is the voice of Click Clack, who is the Geonosian that we see in this episode. He is also the voice of the battle droids and General Grievous in Clone Wars. Some background about the sterilization of Geonosis and why it happened. The Geonosians were the first people to work on the construction of the future Death Star. They created the original plans as we see in Episode 2. Construction paused during the Clone Wars and continued once the war had wrapped up. The Geonosians worked for years on it until the project came under Tarkin's watch. Fucking Tarkin. Farkin had the construction moved, and then he ordered the genocide of the entire planet by gassing it to protect the knowledge of the Death Star. Killing over 100 billion people, it was the largest genocide committed by the Empire. In the aftermath of the Galactic Civil War, Mon Mothma would later put into place laws to protect non-humanoid species from speciesism, citing Geonosis as an example. The helmets from Saul's men killed are the same designs from both Return of the Jedi and Rogue One. The version of Saul Guerrera we see is designed to be like a flashback version of his design that we see in Rogue One. Sometime over the next 2 years between this episode and Rogue One, Saul will lose his leg and develop a debilitating breathing problem. Some production differences. I found this funny. So there's some production differences going on. Because when they first made Saul in the Clone Wars, he had blue eyes. But Forrest Whitaker has brown eyes in Rogue One. So they just kind of found a middle point in this episode and they gave Saul Guerrera green eyes here. Why not? Maybe he has contacts. Since Rebels Recon was for both Part 1 and Part 2 for this episode, I will cover Rebels Recon in next week's episode. You know who also has a debilitating breathing problem? I was sitting here like, I was like, do I talk about eyes? No, breathe. Breathing problems.
Swamps make your lungs all mossy.
Maybe you just ate some bad moss.
Better.
I'm glad. Well, I got a question.
Bucket better get. Yoda's going to throw up.
Oh. Anyways, you actually sounded like you were coughing up a hairball.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly the sound my cat made when she, like, coughs up hairball. Just like,
Baby Yoda hairball.
Ugh. Well, I have a question for you, Yoda.
A question for Yoda? Yes.
We're going back to Geonosis this week. What planet would you like to go back to and revisit to as some kind of do-over?
Planet of Apes.
Go
Yoda
on.
Yoda would do do-over at Planet of the Apes, yes. Blew the whole thing up. Yeah.
You know what I'm surprised you didn't say?
Mistake it was. What?
I'm surprised you didn't say you wish you could go back to Kashyyyk to try and win over Miss Mala from Chewbacca.
Ooh. Yoda liked to ride on Wookiees' backs. Yes. Wookiee back ride. Yes. Give Yoda a Wookiee back ride. Whee!
Did you ever meet Miss Mala while you were on Kashyyyk?
No. Never let Chewie never let Yoda meet his wife. Never. Yoda doesn't know why.
I have a feeling of why, Yoda.
Yoda knows all the special Wookiee places to scratch. Yes. Make their legs kick. Yes.
Well, maybe we can get you there and get you a do-over.
Oh, maybe comb over.
All right, Yoda.
Well, he's a little happier this week.
Yeah, he coughed up a hairball and going back to the Planet of the Apes, and we'll get him set up with Mala. Chewie's always off with Han. It's not like Chewie's home with his wife.
I know, but you don't want to tell Yoda that.
Yeah, you're
right. That's why Art Carney was hanging out there.
Oh my God, Mala and Art Carney was having an affair.
Right, he's the handyman.
Super handyman. He was just like, here, let me show your grandfather porn and distract him.
Exactly. Here's a toy for the kid, and here's some porn for grandpa. Let's go in the kitchen and do some cooking.
Some cooking.
Yeah.
God.
Cooking with Corman.
Anyway, Act One.
Act One.
The Ghost Crew is off on a super secret mission that only Hera knows about. And Grunkle Rex is with them! Hi, Rex! I always miss you! And Hera tells Chopper to call into command. And there's Commander Sako. Sako? There's Commander Sato with Bail freaking Organa. And Bail is like, hey, guys! So, remember when Zeb and Kallus crash-land on the moon of Geonosis last season? But before that, before the crash and stuff, you said that you didn't find anyone on the planet of Geonosis, and we thought that was mighty strange. So we sent a team to look for them, and we haven't heard back from the team. And they found an energy source, and then we lost contact with them. So can you, like, I don't know, like, please bring them back and look for their intel? And when Hera asks about who they're looking for, it's Grunkle Rex that answers that they're looking for Saw Gerrera of Rogue One. And apparently he knew the mission the whole time. And Rex is like, oh yeah, me and Saul go way back to the Onderon arc of the Clone Wars. They gave me the stupidest outfit in that arc. I looked real dumb. But I know it takes a lot to bother Saul because he's a low-grade terrorist and all. So if he's worried, we should go and look at it. And they're all worried about what Saul didn't find. They arrive at Geonosis, and Zev is like, hey look! There's the moon me and my boyfriend Kallus had our first date on. But no one has time to reminisce about the past, because unlike Season 2, when there were a shit ton of debris and construction modules from the Empire, they're all gone now without a trace. And they pinpoint the power source, but they can't contact Saul. And they head down to the planet to check it out. And Rex hates everything about Geonosis in this trip. With good reason, actually. With really good reason. But with a bad dust storm, they are forced to land. And the power source they're looking for and Saw's last known coordinates are in two different places. So they decide to split up into two teams, with Rex, Ezra, Kanan, and Chopper, aka Team Clone Wars. And they're going to go out and look for Saw while the rest of them stay behind to figure out what the power source is, and just in case the Empire decides to show up. Team Clone Wars heads out to the sandstorm, and Ezra's like, I can't see anything! And Kanan's like, oh, poor you, with your temporary loss of eyesight, you poor baby. And they come across a temple up ahead, and Rex is like, I'm suddenly remembering the horror movie that Cody told me about with zombies and brain worms from the Clone Wars, and I really don't like this at all. And once inside, they start looking for Saw, and away into the underground tunnels. Ezra is really impressed that a bunch of bugs were able to build a temple like this, and Rex says that they're deadly smart and creative artist types, apparently. And Kanan asks how Rex knows Saul, and Rex is like, weren't you listening earlier in the recap where I talked about the Onderon arc? I trained him and his amazing, awesome, kick-ass sister, Steela, who was a martyr, and she was the best. We all love Steela here. Ezra finds the entrance to the underground tunnels, and they head down into it. And as they investigate, they start noticing kind of weird things. A lot of the side passages are sealed off. It blocks the airflow, you know, to stop pesticides from coming in from the Empire killing them. But our heroes don't know that. And Ezra finds a bunch of helmets, all from Saul's units. But there's no bodies. Kanan senses something up ahead, and there is something watching them. But the thing moves away, and it's gone. Kanan votes that they go back to Hera since they're out of their element at the moment. Ezra wants to push forward, so Rex breaks the tie because he wants to keep looking for his friend. Kanan sighs and continue on not liking this one bit. And they reach a dead end, but then they hear metal footsteps approaching. And a bunch of battle droids show up! Hooray for battle droids! Yes! Oh, and they also have a roly-poly droidica with them, and our heroes are trapped. Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. Always glad to see Bail Organa. At the beginning, I'm like, ooh, Bail Organa. I know he's just going to pop in and pop out, but you know me. I wanted the Bail Organa show that was basically like Magnum P.I.
Yeah, I have that note too. Like, I forgot Bail was in this episode. And like,
because he's just sort of there and gone.
Yeah, and I think it was our season 2 recap. Ever since you brought that up about like how they really could be using Bail Organa more, like, I think about that point a lot, and I really wish they did use Bail Organa more. He's a great character, and they could do something with his wife too. They could have given like stuff to Breha Organa. Like, I mean, I love his character. I loved him in the Clone Wars. I love him in the prequels, and I love him here. And I wish they did more. And I think about that point ever since you brought it up.
Yeah, and I was like, ooh, Bail Organa, that's a good sign. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm like, that's right, another creepy episode right in a row. I hope I'm getting some more creepy shit, which sort of semi. It's not a really as, like, a scary as it's a little creepy around the edges, but it's more of sort of a chase episode. But, well, I'll take it.
Yeah, kind of have a cat and mouse.
Yeah. And now ever since you said you've been making blind jokes about Kanan, I noticed Kanan said, let's go take a look. And I'm like, and I like Rex's lines of the Geonosians look like battle droids. And then I like that battle droids showed up because I forgot too. And as soon as I hear him go, stop right where you are, I'm like, oh yeah, baby, they're back. Okay, so those are all my I only have one sort of like more a question for you, note. Do you think Hera purposely is just sort of keeping Zeb and Ezra separate on missions so they're not like fighting each other for who's in charge? That's why she's like, Zeb will stay here in case the Empire shows up, and he's like, oh yes, you know.
Oh, you mean
that's
like
my
after the Hondo episode with them fighting?
Right.
No, I don't. I honestly think it was a tactical move because they have three and a half heavy hitters on their team. They have the two Jedi and Zeb, and I would count Rex as the half. And I hate to say that, but, you know, he's just getting older in his age. He's not as agile as he used to be, but he's still
compared
a bit of
Jedi
a heavy.
Yeah.
And so if she would have sent, like, all four of their heavy hitters out together, then it would have just been her and Sabine. And just think about how the rest of that mission would have played out with if Sabine by herself was trying to, like, move that proton, whatever, the shield generator thing. So I don't think that she's purposely trying to separate them. I think it was purely tactical, so each team had some heavy hitters. I think she really honestly meant, like, Zeb's there in case the Empire... And also, they need multiple people on guns. They have, like, what, three guns on the Ghost? So if Zeb was gone, it would just be Hera and Sabine on the Ghost if the Empire showed up to shoot stuff.
That's true.
So, I don't think she's doing it on purpose. I do think it's just straight-up tactical.
But that's all I got for part one.
I'll get my two little notes out of the way, and one of my big notes was Bail Organa. Stila, shout-out. I love Stila. I miss her all the time. Stila! 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 I love you! I miss her all the time. Also, in big words, I wrote, I forgot battle droids were in this. I love the battle droids every time they show up. No matter if it's Clone Wars, Rebels, or Resistance. I love, spoiler for Resistance.
Yep.
I love when battle droids show up. My only other note is, I find it really interesting. All right, so Bail Organa and Mon Mothma are two of the founders of the Rebellion, right? And we know later on that Saw Gerrera and Mon Mothma are not friends. They do not like each other, and they're pretty much working against each other in the Rebellion. But then, in this, Bail Organa says that he specifically sent Saw on this mission, which I found very interesting. So I'm wondering...
Well, a lot might be happening in the next couple years, you know?
And I'm wondering because if something happens between now and the later episodes with Mon Mothma, because I think it's season 4 when Mon Mothma and Saul have their conversation where they're just like, well, I don't like your ways. And she's like, I don't like you. So I'm thinking that something happens there, but I just found that very interesting because Mon Mothma and Bail Organa are supposedly on the same side, and there's some, like, kind of inner working politics going on there where either Saul hasn't gone full terrorist yet, or he's just starting to do that to the point where Bail is still okay with using them, but they're not okay using
them. Well, they could all be using each other just because they, you know, out of necessity. You know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that conversation with Saul and Mon Mothma is season 4, because I feel like they were on Yavin, and they don't go to Yavin until season 4. I think. It's been a hot minute since I've
seen
season
4. I don't remember, yeah.
It's been a hot minute, but it's coming up. So I just found that really interesting, that there's, like, those dynamics going on, and either Saul hasn't gone crazy pants yet for the Rebellion to be like, oh, God. But we know that he kind of has, because he's definitely done some terrorist stuff, because we know that from Saul, or not Saul, we know that from Kallus, from the Honorable Ones. And so maybe he hasn't gone full crazy pants, or maybe there's something going on between Bail and Mon Mothma that we don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. But that's all I had for act. The acts were kind of weirdly long and then very short. Like, the first act was, like, the first 9 minutes, and usually it's, like, the 7-minute mark, so.
Did you just start Bailmon shipping?
Bail Organa loves his wife very, very much. because Bail Organa is a good husband, and he loves his wife very, very much.
Moth Morgana?
Mangana!
The beast with 1,000 arms.
Bail the moth? Act 2.
Act 2, yeah. We better get to act 2.
Okay. Bail the moth. I don't know why that's so funny to me. Alright, so act 2. Team Clone Wars is trapped at a dead end with a bunch of jet battle droids and a droidica staring them down. But just as the battle starts, an explosion goes off behind the droids, and our team quickly pick off the last of them. And then, out of the smoke, comes Saul Guerrera. And everyone's like, oh my god, it's Forrest Whitaker! Ah! And Rex and Saul are like, Rex, my man! Saw, my old friend, you're looking like a washed-up dog. Oh, well, look at what the cat dragged in. And they're all buddy-buddy. Saw meets Kanan and Ezra, noting that he never thought he would see another Jedi again. But all the pleasantries end, because Saw Saw found something on Geonosis. I don't know what I wrote there. Back with Space Mom team, Sabine and Zeb have ventured outside the sandstorm to look for the source of the power reading. And boy, do they for once luck out, because they find a military-grade shield generator, something that their base super-duper needs right now, especially because it's what saves their ass in the Season 3 finale. Sabine and Zeb get to working on it, but Zeb is super suspicious about this gift shield generator staring them in the face. It's not every day that weapons fairies come along and drop one of these things on their doorstep. So there has to be something here that the shield was protecting, which prompts him to work a little bit faster. And that just so happens to be what Saul found here too. And he's asking the same questions as Zeb. Someone is keeping the shield generator operational, and it certainly is not the stupid battle droids, because someone has also been repairing the battle droids too. And Saul's like, it's a bug! Bugs everywhere! I got my men, and it's out to get me, too. And Kanan's like, please remember that I am the only person who voted to go back to the team and regroup and not be stuck down here in a death cavern. I just want that on record. So let's go back up and talk to Hera. And then Saul goes a little crazy pants, pointing out that the Empire killed off everyone on this planet for a reason. And the bug that's trapping them there is the only person who knows what's going on. Again, Kanan is outvoted by Ezra and Rex to go with Saul, but Kanan firmly states that they have to at least give Hera a heads up about the battle droids, and Saul has a way to do that. And he takes them to the air shaft that goes straight up to the surface, Saul tracked the bug to that location, but the bug severed the bridge across the way, so Saul hasn't been able to get further than that. But because there's an opening to the top, they can finally call O'Hara. And Kanan's like, Hora! Space wife! Look out, there's droids! Droids out there! But you're safe as long as the sandstorm doesn't die down. And Hera looks out the window, where she has sent Sabine and Zeb to get a shield generator. And she sees that the sandstorm is starting to die down. And Hera's like, well, fuck. She calls into Sabine and Zeb to warn them about the droids. And they look around and see a bunch of wrecks around them. No, nothing like that. But then Sabine is like, those are some weird-ass looking rocks. And she realizes that they're all roly-poly droidicas, and she and Zeb are completely surrounded. What'd you think of Act 2? Actually, you know what I was thinking? Something what? That we should do. Every time one of us makes a point, we should say each other's name.
That's a good point, Hope.
That is a very good point, Chris.
Yeah. Let's see if we can remember that.
Okay, Chris.
Okay, Hope.
No, please no. Let's
agreed.
Not. Let's not.
Well, yeah. As soon as I saw Saw Gerrera, I'm like, man, the next 2 years are hard on him, man. He gets a lot of mileage. But then while I was just thinking about it, I was thinking, all it takes is one good explosion, and I'll bet you that's what happened to him. You know, it could be a long story, but I think what happened to him was a big explosion, messed up his lungs, rattled his brain, blew off his leg, you know, and scarred him all up, and probably the story behind it was probably also made him very bitter and mistrustful whenever we find out what it is.
I actually have a note kind of similar to that. I always love Saul's later design. Later designs, and I like him here, and I like him in Rogue One, because remember, he's roughly the same age as Ahsoka. They were both teenagers in the Clone Wars, so they're right around the same age. And she looks great. Ahsoka looks great, but he looks so much older. Like if you put Saul's Rebels design beside Ahsoka's Rebels design, he looks way older than she is. Which is nice because it really shows the horrors of war and how he people. And
he's paying his evil tax. Ahsoka, when Ahsoka does something that's bad, it's like it was in the service of the Jedi, and she did like was in a larger, you know, Saw Gerrera gets in there with the knife and, you know, pokes people in the eye and stuff, and you know, so it takes its toll on him. But he's looking good now compared to when we see Rogue One.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
He's looking like 20 years older than he should be.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I always loved about Saw Gerrera is they always do such amazing visual storytelling just through his costume designs. Because, like, he really... And just, like, how he looks. Like, one of his eyes is a little bit more droopy than the other. Did you notice that? Like, one of his eyes kind of is always half closed. He just looks like he's 20 years older than Ahsoka when they're roughly the same age.
And my only other note is Saw, and this is Forrest Whitaker, who's a, you know, great actor.
Yeah.
Man, his laugh, his like chuckle laugh that he has is so evil. Like when they go running and they run up to the edge where the bridge was, and he's just like, and it's just something a really good actor can do that puts so much, like, I'm like, I don't really like that laugh. If I was there, I'd be like, hey, you know what? I really don't like the tone of that laugh. Why did you laugh like that, Saw?
I kind of have a similar note to that.
It's just a really nice bit of voice acting, because he's always been kind of a little bastard. But now that it's gotten, you know, at first he was like more of a cocky, bossy bastard. But now he's like, he's seen some shit, man. And he's dark.
He was
enjoying anything that was messing up the Jedi a little bit. He was just like, hey, 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 hey.
Yeah, I kind of have sort of a similar note to that in the same ballpark. Remember, I'm going to go back to season 2. Remember the episode Stealth Strike with Rex and Kanan, and it was their buddy cop episode? Rex was so much fun, and he was just having, like, the time of his life, and, like, on other missions, like, he's had a great time, and even in the Rebellion, like, he's been very, like, he had kind of, like, a very positive energy, and even when Kanan was being kind of a bitch to him, like, he was always very, like, radiated this positive energy. In the scene where Rex and Saul meet again, it's odd for Rex, because they're friends, they've known each other a long time, but Rex came off very guarded, like, he was very carefully choosing his words, and he was very, like, almost like he was just like, hey, Saul, you okay? It's good to see you again. And
that's how you treat people like Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, and it's, his energy is completely different in this episode than we've seen Rex before, and I think that is a very, very telling thing.
I think Rex, like, was also happy about being in a bug hole. And was like,
yeah.
I think it messed with his head. So it was, you know, fighting on a, like, on a spaceship and blasting bad guys is, you know, that's his bread and butter. But, like, when you're crawling through the bug holes, that's where you go to die, you know?
Yeah. And I was thinking about, like, if you're watching Star Wars chronologically, which one day I would like to do, where I just sit down with episode one and just go straight through everything chronological. And this is your first introduction to Saw Gerrera, or since Clone Wars, like, so you're comparing him to Clone Wars because we're going chronological. Rex is very telling in this scene where he's, because he's so guarded, and it says a lot by being so subtle, especially what we've seen of Rex so far in Rebels. He probably saw,
you know, he knew what Saw was like when he was younger, and he respected him, but he also knew what path he would be willing to go down. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was nicely done. That's all I got for part two. So,
yeah.
Whatever you got.
My other note that's kind of in this ballpark too, in the scene where they meet Saw, Saw mentions that he never thought he would see another Jedi again. Which tells me that neither Rex nor Bail Organa told him about Ahsoka being alive. And Ahsoka, which I found kind of interesting, because Ahsoka is the one that worked the closest with Saul and Steela. So, like, she would actually be a much closer ally to Saul than either Rex or Bail Organa. And I think that's also very telling that they're hiding that she's alive from Saul, which makes sense because, granted, he's kind of a crazy person and a borderline terrorist.
Yeah, and I would keep all Jedi information on a super need-to-know basis, because there's a lot of people invested in, you know, there's bounties out on Jedi and, you know,
Inquisitors.
Right, and Vader's out there. He's not too happy with them. So it's better to, like, yeah, and Saw is definitely, like, Saw is trustworthy as a rebel, but, like, sometime he might need, you know, you never know. He might use the knowledge of word about a Jedi to, like,
get lure something
if
Imperials.
He thinks it's for a better cause or something, and he's a crazy person, so you don't know what his better cause is. So, yeah for sure.
I just found that interesting, because Saw, that we know from the Onderon arc, was very close with Steela. And I feel like, you know, Ahsoka could have been a good resource to kind of keep Saul reined in, because they both had that Steela connection. But then I started thinking about it, and Ahsoka not catching Steela is part of the reason why Steela died.
Right.
So he could also use that against Ahsoka. So there's a lot going on there that I found that entire interaction just really interesting.
Yep. Saw Gerrera is a character who has a really fleshed out story and very little screen time.
Yeah.
You know, but it's great, because that happens in Star Wars, but it usually happens backwards. You know, somebody takes a character that walked by in the cantina and writes a story about him, or, you know, writes a novel about a character's backstory or something. And Saw is just something that's just sort of developed in, you know, from Clone Wars on, just sort of in the edges, and you get a check in on him every once in a while, and you see him from a teenager to, you know, getting blown up at the end, and it's really interesting, and a lot is communicated through the very little time that you spend with him.
Yeah, and that I was about to say the same thing, because we get where we first meet him, and we get the end of his life. And now they're filling in the middle parts of it to kind of like connect the two together. And it's all just done so well. And it goes back to like the visual storytelling of his costumes. It goes back to and his body and how people react to him, how Rex is reacting to him. It's just everything is done so well because not everything is about Saw. It's how everybody around him. And we see this later on in the episode. You can tell that Kanan and Ezra are starting to pick up that something's not right on him. And especially by the time where they get to Click Clack, the Geonosian, even though he's not named in this episode, his name is Click Clack. When the moment that Saul slams him into the wall, Ezra just looks at Kanan just like, whoa, what is happening, master? And like Kanan just like kind of turns his head a little bit. Like, it's all done very, very well, where it's just like, it's just presented well, and they do a lot to really inform about like who Saul is, his past and stuff like that, with like the smallest amount of what he's been in 4 episodes, 2 here, he's in 2 episodes later, and then Rogue One, and we get way more about him than we do a lot of the movie characters.
Yeah, and Rogue One even does a little time. You know, you see you get a glimpse of an earlier version of him in that, too, when he finds her as a child.
Yeah, finds Jen, so it's just so well done, and I love it.
Yep.
And then I have just 2 other notes, very little notes. I like, even though he doesn't get many big episodes from here on out, I like that Zeb gets little moments to really shine. What this refers to is when he's just like, why is the shield generator here? Like, this is a gift, and it's suspicious. And Sabine is like, what do you mean? He's like, this is suspicious. And I just like that, like, because if you haven't picked up so far, like, Zeb's one of my favorite characters, and I'm always wanting more Zeb content. I named a cat after him. I love him so much.
Well, he's one of those characters who's like, wait, things are going well.
things don't never go well for us.
things always go really well until all of a sudden they don't. I'm suspicious.
Can you imagine, like, if they had just, like, a really good day, and that really good day, they're just paranoid all day? Just like, I got a free scone from Space Starbucks.
It's all just happened. Like the last episode where Ezra kept seeing Maul, except it's all them just looking over at something, but there's nothing there. And then they get everything done right, and then they go and get their groceries and go to bed, and everything worked out perfectly that day. Maybe they had a million days like that. They just don't make for interesting shows.
That's actually a very valid point. Back when I was like super into Once Upon a Time, I went to a panel at Dragon Con, and Sean McGuire, who played Robin Hood, was on it, and he was talking about that. He was like, he said, like, I always get all these like questions asked to me of like why Robin and Regina can't be together and like what's keeping them apart. And he said, if we just had an episode where they go to IKEA and they have a really nice day and they go home together, it makes for a very boring show.
Yeah, they sit on the couch and play video games all day, and then they make some sandwiches, and then they go to bed. Yeah. You know?
I would watch a episode where the Rebels have a good day, but past that, I'd be like, okay. It'd be nice for, like, a episode. But past that, no, and yeah.
Yeah, with most people, if you take like all the like stuff that ever, like exciting stuff that ever happened in their life, and condense it down into a movie, most people would have a really exciting life. But then you would also, but none of those people would know, realize that they'd have an exciting life, because most of your life is just sort of downtime, doing your thing, getting your work on, and you know, sitting around in your underwear, scratching your ass, and
I spent a good chunk of my day today playing Breath of the Wild. Good chunk of my day.
Right. You know, and that's the way it is with, I think, you know, most people do not live that life of adventure. But if you winnow it down, so that's what we're seeing with any TV show or something. You're seeing the people's, you know, you're seeing greatest hits, you know.
Yeah.
You're seeing it edited down to just the most exciting stuff. So,
and yeah, honestly, that's what the rest of it, like, that's what fan fiction is for. Like, there's fluff fan fiction. Fluff fan fiction is just like, they had a good day and they get scones.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what fluff fan fiction is for. And it has a place in fandom, but it makes for boring TV show. Though I would watch one episode of like the Ghost Crew's normal downtime day, and because I do like those moments like where we do see like Zeb cleaning his rifle in the background, or like Hera reading a book with her feet up. Like I like those little moments.
That's the thing is, you could get lots of you could put lots of character shadings into what somebody does on their downtime. Yeah. You know? But you couldn't do a whole season on it.
And
Hera, if you did pull that off, you'd be a super genius. So
Hera likes Kanan and his downtime.
Oh, we don't get to see any of that either. We never.
When did they make a baby?
Anyway. We never see any baby making going on in Star Wars ever.
You know it happens a lot.
Nobody ever builds a beast with two or three backs because it's an alien galaxy we don't know.
my only last note is Sabine. Hera's just like, hey, be careful of those like things in the ground. And Sabine fucking just walks right up and touches one and like brushes it off. And she's just like, oh, it's a droid. Like, honey, don't walk up and touch things. Honey, please don't. I just had that moment where like Sabine.
Don't touch the battle droid.
Yeah, like she just walks right. And like, you're the weapons expert. You should be able to tell that it's a droid. I could tell it's a droid and it's like half buried in the sand. I don't know. I was just honey, don't touch things.
But that's all I have. If you see one, don't touch it. You see, that's the thing is, that reference, I'm making a reference right now. It's so old. It's a reference that I only know because my dad used to make it. And it's, I think Willie Mays used to tell kids not to pick up blasting caps back in the 50s on TV. See that there on the ground? That's a blasting cap. If you see one, don't pick it up. Don't touch that.
What's a blasting cap?
It was, I think it's a, it's something, it's a blast to set off a larger charge. So you would attach it to like dynamite or something. And it was post World War II where like there might have been a lot of military training going on and, you know, blasting caps can find their way into the, you know, into the ground, and kids could have been playing where, you know, it was after the war. So there might've been fields that they were training in and stuff, but apparently blasting caps were just laying around in the '50s and don't touch them.
Huh? Yep. I did not know that.
Yeah. The ads, if you go to YouTube and put in, I think it's Willie Mays. I think it's Willie Mays, you know, blasting caps, that they probably have all the commercials. I only heard about them through my dad. I did, until, you know, as an adult, I was able to look them up on the interwebs, on the infrawebs.
Huh.
Yeah. Hey, sorry, that was a total distraction for nothing.
No, I learned something. Like, I was not aware that there was just like.
Yeah, that's what I'm good for you. For people learning completely useless stuff. So like, but now someday if you're talking to some old codger and he makes a Willie Mays blasting caps reference, you go, I get that joke, which is never going to happen. Never. It's never going to happen. Hope.
All right, Chris. Right. Are you ready for Act 3, Chris?
I am ready for Act 3, Hope. Now we sound like two passive-aggressive, like a passive-aggressive married couple. How do you like the chicken, Chris? I like it just fine, Hope. You did a very good job. Thank you, Chris.
Can I read Act 3, Chris?
Oh. Why? You certainly can, Hope. I'll just mute myself right now.
All right, Hope. Chris. Mute yourself, Chris. See, writers, this is why people don't say their names in conversation. All right, Act 3.
You're acting kind of shady.
Bitch.
Get it?
Shady?
Get it?
No.
Say my name. You're acting kind of shady. Oh, my God.
I don't know what the context is. You've never heard that song? I know the song, but I don't know why you're singing it. I don't know what the context this goes to.
Because I said you were acting kind of, because we were saying each other's name.
Oh, okay.
And then I said you were acting kind of shady.
Anyway, we should probably do Act 3.
Act 3, yes.
Act 3. So Zeb and Sabine are surrounded by roly-poly... I cannot say roly-poly tonight. Roly-poly is not a word that I can say. Droidicas. They can't blast one.
Because you have to say it like a clown. You have to say, roly-poly battle droids.
That's true. I'm gonna try that again. So Zeb and Sabine are surrounded by roly-poly battle droids. Is that the
name? Yes.
And they can't blast one, or all the droids will wake up. And Hera can't hit them with the ghost cannon, because the sandstormed, plural, or past tense, clogged up the guns. So I was writing this during Act 3 during watching the Oscars. We're about to have a time because I was writing during the commercial break of the Oscars. So I did not proofread those. Here we go. So they decide to take the deflector core, which is the thing that they came from, and move carefully through the droids. It's really tense as they make their way through the sleeping minefield. Back with Team Clone Wars, Hera calls them back to the ship because this mission is getting really dangerous. But Saw Gerrera has never done great with orders from people he don't know, and he doesn't want to leave yet. Then Kanan senses something across the cavern, and Ezra tells Chopper to light up the other side. And I mean light up with a flashlight way, not like shoot up the other side, just to clarify. Chopper shines the light, and they see, click-clack, Gene Ocean across the way. And they see that he is holding a button, and he pushes the button. And up on the surface, all the droids around Sabine and Zeb start waking up and coming out of the sand. And everyone starts to panic, and Kanan wants to go up and help the other space kids. But again, Saul is blocking them because he wants to go after the Geonosian. And everyone is like, that bug isn't as important as our friends, Kay thinks. But this isn't Saw Gerrera's first time manipulating situations. He points out that they will never reach Zeb and Sabine in time to save them. But they could, you know, go after the Geonosian and get him to turn off the droid since the bug is just right across the way, just right over there. And Hera okays this plan, and they act. And Kanan force throws Ezra across the way and sends Chopper with him. Outside, Sabine and Zeb are getting ready to fight. But then, Space Mom gets a plan, and she tells them to turn on the generator and use it to protect themselves. Sabine immediately starts working on it, but the droidicas are almost ready to shoot them. And luckily, she gets the shield up just in time, but it won't hold forever, and now they're on a time clock. Back down below, Kanan has a plan of his own for them to get across the gorge, and he tells Saw and Rex to shoot out the pillar above them. He catches it with the Force before it falls, and Kanan makes a bridge for them to cross along the way. But it's not connected, so Saw and Rex has to... Well, I wrote run the fuck, but they actually more tiptoe across the way. So they did not run the fuck as they go. And again, it's a really tense scene because Kanan is having to hold them up on the rock, and it's moving around on them, and parts of the rock starts breaking away. And Kanan digs deep into the Force and gets them all the way across. And Saw's like, wait, we left the blind guy all the way over there. And Kanan parkours right across with no problem. And Saul says, I forgot they could do that. Ezra is very far ahead of them, though. He and Chopper are hurrying through the tunnels, and they spot Click-Clack. The bug runs away, and Ezra and Chopper chase after him. They split up to cut him off, but they lose the Geonosian and the catacombs, which isn't good because Zeb and Sabine are in a lot of trouble right now. So Ezra closes his eyes, and he taps into the Force. And he senses that Click-Clack is above them and jumps up. Ezra starts fighting with the bug, who drops the remote down to Chopper, but Click-Clack jumps after it. And then Sabine and Zeb's shields are failing. But luckily, the controller gets shot and destroyed by Saw, which makes all the droids shut down, and Sabine and Zeb are safe! You can really tell how I was like watching the Oscars during this last part, because it's just one sentence after one sentence after one sentence. You guys can't physically see my notes, but it was
commercial breaks, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell I was watching the Oscars. And now that they have Click-Clack cornered, Saw slams him into the wall and makes his head go click-clack against the stone. That's not written in, that's fun. And demands to know what the Empire has built here on Geonosis. And Ezra looks on in shock at the tactics. And then the episode ends with a to be continued. It just kind of
ends. Yep.
What'd you think of Act 3?
Well, it ends, like, it's funny because it ends with, like, click clacks, like, rah, rah, and you see Saw Gerrera looking like, oh my god, I can't believe what he's going to say. And it doesn't even go like, vroom. It just, like, end of part one.
Again, this is Chris's fault. I wanted to do both episodes together.
I like the, he's no Skywalker line was...
I almost wrote that in. It's a good line.
It's a good thing he's no Skywalker for all of them, so, yeah. If they knew what they knew about... Well, I don't know if they know that Darth Vader is Anakin. No, they don't, because that was only... Was Ezra... Well, Ezra wouldn't have known even seeing...
I go back and forth whether or not Rex knows at this point. Like, I am because there's some context clues to hint that he knows. Mostly, we talked about this a little bit in Twilight of the Apprentice in that opening scene where he's talking to Ahsoka. Like, we were debating that. So there are context clues that he might know, but there's also, like, nothing to confirm that. So I go back and forth whether or not Rex actually knows at this point, or if he ever finds out. He might not even find out till Endor when he hears from some Skywalker kid or something. That's actually a question I would love to know, is when Rex found out that Anakin was Vader, or if he ever knew.
Someday there's going to be a book. Somebody's got to write a Rex book.
Oh, I want a Rex book so bad. So bad.
My only other note is I finally put my finger on what this episode was like what I wanted to compare, like, not a horror movie or anything. This episode was very video gamey, and the way video games are getting now, like, I can't remember the name of the one we were talking about last week, but
Fallen Order,
plays out sort of, you know, you'll have the cutscenes and stuff, but they're getting more and more like almost like a movie playing out as time goes on. But this has a very, like, okay, we got to get this, do this here. And what really set it off for me was when they were crossing the bridge, and you could see on the bridge, like, cracks at regular intervals. And I was like, uh-oh, better watch out for those. Oh, yep, there they go. And it was... And it was just like, if I was playing a video game, I'd be like, uh-oh, as soon as I get to that crack, it's going to go. So that, you know, it had a very video game feel to it. And that's not a complaint, but that's just, I put my finger on what it was that it was reminding me of. But that's all I really have about it. Like, yeah, because I don't know what happens next. So there's a couple things I can't put into context, but, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all my notes for Act 3 are pretty short. One is just a tiny, like, little gripe. So Hera mentions that she can't shoot the ghost cannon because of the sandstorm. Then why are these buried in the sand droids working, and why are they not fucked up as well? Like, I think it would have been cool just to have, like, a couple of them having, like, weapons malfunctions and, like, trying to shake out sand just to buy Sabine and Zeb some time.
Little grindy sound effects on him and stuff.
Yeah, or like maybe like one shoots and like some sand like poofs out and then he can shoot or something. Uh-huh. It was just like a little continuity thing, because like Hera was like, I can't help you, and yet the droids are like, fuck everything, sand. So I'm sorry, because I've been like for my website, I've been like learning Pinterest, and I came across some artwork of just like different times where like Obi-Wan needs to control Anakin, so he just like throws sand at him. He's just like, sand.
pocket sand.
God, I love King of the Hill. That's one of my favorite shows of all time, is King of the Hill. I love that fucking show. Anyway, my next note is, because this is a two-parter, I actually really enjoy the slower pace of it. It doesn't usually, because I can, you know, they're trying to, it's such a breakneck pace because they're trying to fit everything in 22 minutes. So it's nice to have that slower pace, because then you can actually have those character moments. Like, you can kind of concentrate a little bit more on Saul. It builds the tension with the droids surrounding like Sabine and Zeb. So I do, like, I don't want every episode to be like a two-parter, but when we do have two-parters, I really enjoy them because they do just such a good job with the slower pace.
Yeah. It does. It has a different feel to it than a normal episode. I mean, it does work in the three acts, but like the way the story is progressing, it takes it about half as slow.
Yeah. My next note is I just love Saul because he's constantly blocking them over and over again because they're not doing what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And it just shows like how like this is not his first rodeo. He's used to like manipulating these. And honestly, he's not really wrong. Like, they would not have made it up to the surface in time. So he's not wrong.
But at the same time, he is also the guy who used up all his friends to try to get what he wants. And now he's got a new bunch of friends.
Yeah, so...
We saw the helmets of those guys, so yeah.
Yeah. And my last note is, Kanan Jarrus is my favorite Jedi. I love Kanan. And... the scene, just the whole bridge scene of him, like, lifting the bridge and holding it up for Rex and Saul, like, this is a really good Kanan episode, actually. Like, he is the voice of reason in this. He's a right in a lot of this episode. Like, he is really being that strong mentor type, but he still has his, like, little cowboy sass going on here and there. But I love that scene with the rock bridge. Like, you can tell that he's just... his power
blind has made him stronger. It's quieted him down and focused him and made him stronger.
Yeah, like I don't think he could have done that in season one. I don't think he could have.
No, I think they did it to show that because that's a pretty big thing. I think they did it to show that he'd like really taken a step up.
And also, and you can see how tough it like. It is like when he's having to push them the last little bit, there's that image of him like kind of spreading his legs a little bit more, bending his knees, and he kind of like squats and like kind of lifts like he's physically
like
lifting
he's really lifting
and,
it yeah
and then when they get across and he drops it, he just automatically like starts panting. But it's just so good to show where he comes from, because I was talking with Megan and we were talking about Kanan's progression with the Grand Inquisitor, because one day I will write a Grand Inquisitor thing of Kanan, why Grande was important to Kanan. And we were talking about, like, Grande's first appearance in the Luminara episode when they were trying to get Luminara out of jail and she's a dead corpse. And Kanan is just so out of his league, and he's just so under, like, his powers are just, like, not there compared to this, where he's doing something so amazing. And I love Kanan. I love how they develop him. He's my favorite Jedi for a reason, and he's just so good in this episode from being the voice of reason, still having his sass, and then doing this amazing badass scene with the rock bridge. It's just all so, so good.
Yeah, and then just jumping at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just like, all right, let's go, and run down the hallway.
Yeah,
and
that
just
was, like, yeah,
I heard you say I'm not a Skywalker.
It was really well done. It was like visually and the timing of it was very Star Wars-y and just fun. It was just nice, and it was a nice capper on the whole action sequence.
Which is also nice with that slower pace, because if it was all in a 22-minute episode, that scene would have gone so fast. Like, they would have had to be like, fucking across the thing, and then he jumps. But, like, because of the slower pace being a two-parter, they really took the time to really showcase Kanan in that moment, to showcase his character, showcase his power. And it's because of that slower pace, and it's just really well done. But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
All right, Chris, score it up.
I give it an 8 out of 10. It's a good episode. Visually it had some nice moments, but it's half of a whole. But it's a good half of a whole. 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I give it an 8 out of 10 as well. This episode's a lot of setup. For me, it's really hard to judge this episode because honestly, I don't really remember much of the next episode.
Right.
And there's still a lot of really good stuff. So I kind of would love to, like, after we do next week, kind of look back and see if my score changes. But as of right now, just as it stands, I put an 8 out of 10 as well. I think Saul's character work is great. There's a lot of amazing visuals. And I love Kanan in this episode, and they just do a lot of good stuff. And part one, so
I think what we should try to remember to do is we'll score next episode, and then we'll will sort of give a rough score of how they work as a single episode.
You know what?
So we'll have a sort of double score next week.
I'm writing it right now.
Excellent.
Double score next week for both episodes together. All right. It's in the notes because I always copy the notes from this and then I put them in the next one, so I always know what number we're on. So I will definitely see them next week. So, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on Twitter, iTunes, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. I lost my spot. Where am I? There I am. This week, our feedback comes from our holiday commentaries, and we started with the despecialized version of A New Hope. You guys really enjoyed this. There's a lot of commentaries, comments here. I
think all the people who like Star Wars who didn't haven't watched Clone Wars, this was something for them to, I've seen that, you know?
Yeah, and I just want to note, like, a lot of people wrote kind of like the same, like, you're Chris. Chris is about to read a comment from Greg Kirkman, and a lot of people had a very similar comment to that, so I didn't put every single one, but just know that we did see you guys. I didn't repeat a lot of the comments. And for you, Chris, the line separates conversations.
Okay.
So that middle section is they're all talking to each other.
They're talking to each other? Okay. Yeah. All right, take it away, Chris. We'll start off with Greg Kirkman, who says, 4K77 is the wave of the future, but despecialized is excellent. Don't worry, I'll translate at the end of this. And more of what a clean, neat remastered for home video version should be like. The 4K77 that he's referring to is a remaster of most, I think they took stuff from a couple other sources, but it's mostly just a raw print of the 1977 Star Wars that they found that was in good shape, and they, you know, they just cleaned up they color balanced it a little bit and cleaned up a little bit of the scratches on it for the most part, but it's just sort of how it is, how it was in 77, and I think they pretty much copied the sound mix and everything like that. I've got a copy of it. It's 35 gigs. And that's why Hope and I didn't watch that, but it is. It's amazing. But the despecialized is sort of a version of that, but it's not of one print. They've taken it and made it like if they were making it for like a home video release, just like Greg Kirkman said. Anyway, next conversation we start with Aaron Henley says, I love the original edit. I really do. It's amazing what Lucas and ILM were able to create with nothing but model kit, string, and chicken wire, and even other weirder stuff. That said, I do find the original Battle of Yavin slightly stiff compared to later versions. Yeah, it seems slow because, yeah, I know it's difference in technology and how computers allowed the fighters' cameras to maneuver in ways that fixed models couldn't. Even with the technology they had in Empire, though, they could have made that, they could have done the Yavin battle a little more. But anyway, back to Aaron Henley. He says, I'll even say the explosions are much better looking in the original since they were actually things blowing up. I agree. Still, I just don't get the sense of speed and insanity that I do with the later versions. That's true. Maybe it's partly because I grew up with the SE versions more than the original edit. That's special edition versions. Either way, this is only the nitpickiest of nitpicks, and that's the worst I can say. Then you know I'm okay with both. Plus, Han shoot first. Some guy points a blaster at me, threatens to kill me right then and there. Of course, I'm going to pull the trigger as soon as I could. It's always been self-defense from the beginning. Stop messing with it. I just don't see it, Aaron. I just don't see you in a gun with a gun just shooting people, man. And that's a good thing. All right, this next one is from Gene Hendricks.
Gene.
I can see your point with the Yavin stuff, but I'm old, so I still like the original better. Winky face. As far as the Han scene, changing that guts the storyline of the character. As far as the Han scene, changing that guts the storyline of the character. He originally goes from a guy who will shoot someone under the table, then walk away smirking, to someone who will risk everything to come back and help his friends. The newer version makes him reactive, and lucky that Greedo is blind as a bat.
so his character has less growth. And then Mike Zumo replies to Gene Hendricks, I don't advocate for Greedo firing, but Han is always reactive. Shooting Greedo under the table is the only way he's getting out of there. I don't think there ever was a time Han won't do that. I kind of agree with that. Yeah. I understand that. Pity Lucas didn't. All right, we have a new topic or new conversation with Paul C. Kelly.
And he says, "Oh yeah,
crazy! The original trilogy is the only thing that I have not watched recently, leading up to the rise of Skywalker. Although I feel it's implanted in my head permanently. Oh yeah, I know that feeling." I might as well use this episode to remedy that and kick off the countdown to episode 9. Oh, yeah, then. Oh,
also,
no.
Thanks, everybody, for putting up with me calling Luke a fuckboy for half the time. Oh, what candy do you want to do?
Ooh, candy time.
There's like a small red one called a cachet. It's unique Belgium chocolate.
Oh, I see it.
You want to do that one?
Yes. Oh, look at this little tiny. It looks like a little bow.
It does look like a little bow.
The packaging of it, it kind of looks like a goldfish, a goldfish with two tails.
Oh, it does. Anyway,
it's weird that there's like more packaging space than there is actual cachet inside. Okay, it's a little chocolate block.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris is weird and hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It, sends us candy from all over the world to review. And today we're doing the cachet from Belgium. It's C-A-C-H-E-T.
Ooh, Belgian.
It's C-A-C-H-E-T. I'm assuming it's cachet, but it might be a cachet.
But it's got like a little nuclear futuristic symbol on the top of it, a little pattern. It's neat.
Mine's kind of melty, so.
Oh.
I don't have a futuristic symbol, but mine's kind of melty. It melted in there.
It's my melty desk. Dark chocolate with softer,
God.
Meltier.
Oh my God.
Lighter dark, like more nougaty. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's super, like, just starts melting on the tongue.
It's almost like when you have that dry, powdery chocolate, but when you bite into it, it just starts melting.
Yeah. Mm. It's very light. This is a very light little object, but, boy, it's got some...
This is some of the lightest dark chocolate I've ever
seen. Yes. I mean, the chocolate is dark. It's this is one of the most bitter...
Oh, man.
Awesome. I like them bitter. This is one of the most bitter dark chocolate.
I ate that way too fast. It needs to be like two times bigger.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Now I'm just licking the package.
This is a good one.
Here's me licking the package.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm literally right now kind of rocking back and forth in a like my body dumping endorphins sort of feeling like a heroin addict.
Oh, I leaned way back in my chair the moment it was in my mouth, and I was just like, whoa, I had a moment. Like, I had, like, a deep spiritual moment for half a second there. Okay, now I'm going to continue looking the package. Mmm, thank you, Dario. We love you. We love you so much. Mm. Can you hear me looking the package?
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I still got a chunk of it, like, just leaving it in my mouth, melting. Mm-hmm. And, like, the only thing I can compare it to is, like, not even drugs, because I guess, like, if you're doing, like, heroin or something like that, it would hit you this fast. But, like, as soon as I start getting, eating that dark, dark chocolate... It almost reminds me of, like, when you get up in the morning and or you're a coffee drinker, I'm a tea drinker, and I'll steep, like, a really, like, dark caffeinated tea, like, just over-steep it so it's really constant, and you can, like, feel that caffeine just, like, soaking in.
Yeah.
I'm feeling, like, the chocolatiness just soak... This was an awesome candy, Dario.
It definitely hit me like that first sip of coffee in the morning. That's a very good
comparison. Yes. Yeah.
When I have that first drink of coffee and it just goes straight to my brain and I'm just like, oh yeah.
When I a little behind the scenes, I was meeting with the guy who's fixing up our website today, and I'd just gotten up, a couple hours earlier, and my brain still wasn't going. I got a large size Earl Grey tea, and about halfway through our conversation, I realized I was just going like talking at a mile a minute, and I was just like, ooh, instant power.
It's that moment where I switch where I'm just like, cat, stop screaming at me, to like, oh, hi, cat.
Hello,
hi, cat.
Buddy.
Yes. There's always that moment like where before I've had my coffee where they're just like, hey, and I'm just like, no, stop it. And then when I have those like first couple of sips of coffee, I'm just like, kitties, hi. Well, that's all I have for Ghost of Geonosis Part 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm looking forward to Part 2.
Same here, man. All right, Chris, well, where can people find you?
You can find me at the twotruefreaks.com. That is our website that's getting worked on, as you heard. Maybe it's fixed by now. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's different by now. Maybe it's not. But it's going to be soon. And there'll be new stuff and interesting stuff and better stuff. And the same stuff also. And all the old stuff you've known and loved. That's at twotruefreaks.com. You can see all our websites there, all our podcasts there. We are creeping up on 5,000 podcasts, individual episodes, I should say, instead of 5,000 individual podcasts. That would be insane, but we are insane.
It's kind of insane that we're coming up on 5,000 episodes.
Yeah, of various podcasts. We are also on Facebook. We have the Two True Freaks podcast Facebook page, and we also post up all our shows on there. We have the Two True Freaks Cantina on Facebook, which is sort of a place where you can go to talk to each other and shoot Greedo. And we are also on Twitter, and our Twitter is run by the aforementioned and letter-writing Gene, the podcasting machine. Clean Gene. Clean Gene, the washing machine.
Now you need to put in like a dryer sound.
Why the hell does that amuse me so much?
Put in a washing machine sound now. I'm just like,
that just dropped out of my brain. I didn't even know I was going to say that. But I like it.
It's been so long since I've heard you crack up so hard.
Cream Gene, the milking machine.
All right, you killed it.
Green Gene, the algae machine.
Green bean, the gene machine? I don't know.
Ooh, green bean, green gene, the bean machine.
Ho, ho,
all right. All right, Chris is getting silly on chocolate, so.
Ooh.
Damn, that's good chocolate, man.
Yeah. Dario.
Dario, man, give me more of that chocolate. It's like Labrador. I'm out of it, Hope. Hey, Hope. Where can they find you? And you know what? I just realized I always say your name at the end of the episode.
Yes, you do. I almost want you, listeners, Chris, cut the recording before I could say my
stuff. I just was like, and there's our out. They don't need to know where you are, Hope.
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax. I have a website called GeekyGirlExperience.com, and I write fanfiction on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia. Oh, Lord. I can't believe you got the recording.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. We will see you next week with Ghost of Geonosis Part 2.
Bye.
Bye.
2TrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at TwoTrueFreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Hi, this is Willie Mays. Baseball is a game of playing to win, but playing is safe and so is life. You can play hard, but play it safe.
If you kids find anything that looks like those, don't chase them. Those are blasting caps. Remember now, don't chase them. Blasting caps are used almost every place. Explosives are used, like in a construction work. But you protect your arms and hands and legs and save your eyes. If you see a blasting catch, remember now, don't touch them. Tell the police or a fireman, whatever it is. Have fun like I do with those and not with these.